Welcome in, everyone. This is The Vegas Verdict. I'm Gerard Romalo, and here we take a look at local and national issues of interest. We offer legal insight whenever possible, and ultimately, we hand down a verdict. Today, we are talking about psilocybin, also known as shrooms on the streets. Sometimes they call them psychedelics. And our question today, is Vegas ready for shrooms? Our legal expert joining us today, none other than Tony Abatangelo. He goes by Tony the Tapper sometimes. He's the former judge. And Tony, we're glad to have you back with us once again. Give me your thoughts, just a preliminary reaction to our question today. Is Vegas ready for shrooms?
Of course it is. I think that the biggest problem is the way drugs in general have been perceived over decades. And then, of course, the big problem is people abusing them, you know, and I'm a practical person. Mushrooms are out there, okay? LSD, Molly or MDMA, weed obviously is now legal in Nevada. It's out there. So where's the balance act? That's what you got to come down to, is balancing it out with the party atmosphere of Las Vegas and, you know, staying in control, basically.
Right. And you've got freedom issues are at stake. You've got regulation issues. You know, how do we police this sort of thing? If someone has overdosed, how do we judge an overdose? So a lot to consider. We went out on the street briefly this week and just wanted to get some comment from the community. So let's go ahead and roll video of what some of the reaction was to our question, is Vegas ready for shrooms?
Should Nevada legalize shrooms? Should Nevada legalize shrooms? Should Nevada legalize shrooms?
No, I guess so. I mean, I've been told a lot that it helps regulate your mental capacity, like with depression, anxiety.
I'm saying yes, because it makes me think better, see things different, for the positive way. I mean, they're legalizing everything else. Might as well do shrooms.
No. Give me your thoughts on why not.
I think any drug that's that is governed by the United States government, it's appropriate, like marijuana, cocaine, should be banned.
The mushroom, so it comes from the ground, comes from the earth. It's not like hardcore chemicals.
Do you anticipate a time where we're going to have shroom lounges, like they're opening up pot lounges and that sort of thing?
I hope so. I'll go to one of those before I go to a pot lounge.
Do we have to be concerned about people who are maybe not mature enough to handle this? And you have concerns about what it could mean. People will be driving, hallucinating. And I think that there are concerns about people, you know, driving while hallucinating, or are there some potential pitfalls?
You know, it opens possibly for kids. Teenagers, abuse, so no.
Have an age limit on it. Of course, no matter what you're going to do, it's going to be abused in some way.
There is, because it's more intense than, you know, marijuana and alcohol, but people still do it anyway.
Yeah.
Whether it's legal or not, they're going to do it. There's probably people out there driving now, and nobody ever knows.
Obviously, some of our interviewees had personal experience with shrooms already, and they have their own preferences and their own ideas. Part of our challenge here is going to be that we're dealing with a very mixed bag of experience, and you've got some people who are all in and are ready for shroom lounges, and they want a selection of choices, and then we really want to get into the medicinal discussion. We have two guests with us today, John Dalton and Kate Cotter. You are with the Nevada Coalition for Psychedelic
Medicines.
All right. Thank you so much. John, let's start with you. And I want to point out, you're a retired Navy SEAL. You did several tours of duty, and we thank you for your service 100%. But part of the reason you got involved in this, there's a connection to your military service.
Absolutely.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on. I was a Navy SEAL for 23 years. I did 11 combat deployments to Iraq or Afghanistan, suffered 7 traumatic brain injuries, and what the medical records show is thousands of subconcussive events.
Wow.
Yeah, and so the you know, that when I started to get out and get ready to retire, I started recognizing that I was having some things that were very, very atypical to my career as a SEAL. I started suffering from depression and anxiety. And in talking to the VA and in talking to different people, I was discovering that a lot of this was related to traumatic brain injury. And so in typical fashion, what we do here, they put me on SSRIs and
what's an SSRI?
Thanks, yeah. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And so an SSRI is a pharma drug that addresses the symptoms of of that depression or that anxiety. That's what it does in theory. And the reality is that I think, they put people on it and somewhere around 30% end up after a period of time it only being successful. I myself was considered SSRI resistant. There were significant quality of life side effects that were just horrible, and it was not that effective for me. I talked to another SEAL brother of mine that said, hey, John, you need to look at psychedelic medicine and, give it a shot. And so just like that individual that we interviewed on the street, the one that was like, no, absolutely not. That was 100% my answer. I was like, that sounds like a bunch of hippie drugs being done by a bunch of hippie veterans to go get high.
And in fairness, that's probably going to be the perception from a lot of people out there. A lot of people have this, hallucination, image from the 70s and psychedelic trip era.
Absolutely.
But there's a whole medicinal side to this issue. And let's bring in Kate to the conversation. Kate, you're kind of the researcher, science person of the coalition. First, tell me about the mission of the coalition and what you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us here. We're delighted to be having this conversation, and we're very passionate about it. Nevada Coalition for Psychedelic Medicines was founded as an advocacy organization. It's a 501c4. It's a sister nonprofit to Sierra Psychedelic Society in Northern Nevada, which is a 501c3. And our mission with NCPM is to educate and to promote policy reform. So we have been driving the legislative effort in Northern Nevada. In the state of Nevada, forgive me. We've made a lot of progress.
Bill that was already presented, right? And
yeah,
it did not pass.
It did pass.
It did. So it was originally as a BDR. It was set as a bill draft resolution. It was set up as a decriminalization specific bill with some research set up for MDMA. And the language got changed to look at psychedelic medicines as a whole, specifically psilocybin or magic mushrooms, to develop a working group. And that passed with in a landslide victory because of the recognition of the potential that these medicines can provide to Nevadans.
Tony, where do you see some legal challenges moving forward with this?
Well, it's once again a lot of that old school perception. But let me ask you this, John. So when it got passed, it didn't legalize MDMA or mushrooms or anything, or did it?
It did not.
What was the first step accomplishment?
It's to create a working group, which is currently underway right now in Nevada, the governor's working group on psychedelic medicines.
So what I see with this is just like the progression of marijuana in Nevada. I was born and raised here. I actually have a daughter, as I was telling Kate, up at UNR. She's studying psychology forensics. Mm. So I told her about, how drug use and all this kind of stuff happens. And Nevada, one thing she was surprised about is it's very tough on drugs. We've always had the 24/7 alcohol. And I said, we talked about how she studied, the United States incarcerates more people per capita than any other country in the world. And I told her, Nevada is usually in the top three, it used to be number one, which means out of the whole world, we incarcerate more people per capita than anywhere else. And it's the war on drugs and all that, it's not working.
Right.
So with that being said, let's be practical. So with that, I see this as the progression of marijuana. Growing up here, one joint, 1 gram of marijuana, felony. Then it changed. A slow progression. It took time and education. You could have less than an ounce of marijuana was a misdemeanor. Then medical marijuana was allowed. And now, as long as you got juice, in this state, you can own a dispensary, right? So it's all legal. So, I mean, and like you asked on the video,
yeah,
pot lounges. I said, there's no way that's ever going to happen. But guess what? Casinos want it. So guess what? Mm-hmm. It's going to happen.
It probably will happen. But there's a differentiation here, and I want to play devil's advocate
Absolutely.
A bit, because there's medicinal marijuana, and then there are pot lounges and recreational pot. It took us a while to cross that divide. I see an even greater divide when it comes to shrooms. And again, we have the issue of regulation. I mean, and you know, microdosing, and is there going to come a time when people can walk into a shroom bar or a shroom lounge and have their choice of any of 10 hallucination options, and people are going to be eating their mushrooms or ingesting them however you ingest them. You know, maybe there's a vape, mushroom vape. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But then everybody drives home and they're hallucinating on their way home. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair discussion.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be an element of the society that doesn't want it because of that reason. Do you guys want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I'll actually say something on that right away. And that's that, you know, we engage law enforcement on a routine basis because we want to make sure that their voices are represented in this so that we can look to mitigate harm and mitigate risk as much as possible. One of the words I heard was, we're concerned about the unintended consequences. And that's exactly what you just said.
Mm.
And it is a valid discussion point. And the solution to that is going to be education.
Mm. Well, look at alcohol. People get drunk
and
drive
right.
And they kill people.
Yeah.
Or they get arrested. I mean, there's got to be regulation. There's got to be control. And that's it. You can't just – I see a big difference between having a mushroom lounge or any other kind of lounge that has a harder effect than weed, because how'd you get there and how you getting home, just like you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break here. We're going to continue this discussion. We're just getting started. So we'll be back with more of the Vegas Verdict coming up right after this.
If you've been injured in an accident, you don't have to go it alone. At Paul Pata Law, we understand your injuries aren't just physical. They also bring financial burden and emotional strain. At our firm, it's not just about legal representation. It's about genuine care and commitment. Lock in the attention you deserve from your attorney. We'll get you on the path to recovery. Call Paul Pata Law. Legal security when you need it.
Welcome back, everyone. This is The Vegas Verdict. Our topic today is Vegas ready for shrooms. I want to bring up a point, and Kate and John, we want you to jump in on this. The country right now is in crisis when it comes to behavioral health issues. We have a suicide epidemic, particularly among military, firefighters, police. Depression, anxiety, these things are rampant. And part of the advocacy for the passage of psychedelic drugs is the fact that they can help in these areas. So there is an upside. Kate, why don't you you're the researcher once again. Talk to us about your perspective on this.
We have a remarkable opportunity. So you're mentioning with psilocybin, active component in magic mushrooms, is very, very effective for treating depression, anxiety, addiction, OCD, eating disorders. We call this transdiagnostic efficacy. Mm. And one of the reasons that it can do that is, as a classic psychedelic, it targets, it agonizes the 5-HT2A serotonin receptor, among others, but it's primary where it modulates, and it creates a high degree of neuroplasticity. And it also allows other brain networks that don't normally talk to each other to communicate. Global functional connectivity is a fancy way of saying this. But
I thought that was an easier way of saying it.
Makes sense to me. Now, there's analytical proof and evidence that this does actually work, right?
Clinical trials, there was quite a bit of research done before the Controlled Substance Act of 1970. And then since the early 2000s, when the research picked up again, we have over two decades with the improvement with the advancements with neuroimaging that have shown us how this works. And there's a downregulation with the default mode network, which tends to be overactive in all these conditions. And so we have these studies coming out of Johns Hopkins and Beacon academic institutions all over the country. Many of them have set up their own centers for psychedelic research that show that psilocybin, and there are a number of other medicines too, which we can talk about later, but is hugely effective for treating depression, specifically, you know, treatment-resistant depression, and anxiety. And there are also studies in the works for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and other neurodegenerative diseases as well.
If I could tack on to what Kate was saying too, she touched off on about how long we've been actually studying these medicines. And the reality is that in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, there was no recreational use until, you know, Timothy Leary got a hold of it in the econoculture. But they were all medical based, and there were over 1,000 studies and 30,000 participants during that time frame before our medical technologies came through that started to validate this stuff. And in fact, it's a little known fact, bigger known fact, because of Michael Pollan's book now, but was that Bill Wilson, you know, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, he actually broke his alcohol addiction with the use of LSD.
Well, I guess a question that I would have is, should doctors be the ones prescribing this, or do we self-police?
That's a great question. Yeah. Who's in charge? Because, you know, like marijuana now, you can go at the dispensary and you can get really potent or high grade or strong marijuana, and you can get low grade. Mm. And there's a big difference on, I guess, the effect it has on you. So how does that work with, for example, mushrooms? Are they different? Are they all the same? Who would be in charge of controlling what you get?
Dosage. So again, when we look back in history and we look at what happened in the 60s and 70s, the intention was to go straight to all out legalization to get this into mainstream. And, you know, we know what happened. It shut down for over 50 years. Psychedelic medicine was put in the corner as the bad boy drug, and Schedule One, we weren't even allowed to study it. I think what we're looking at now is we take a position.
And let me interrupt you real
quick.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Schedule One is fentanyl, methamphetamine, which is heroin. It's what is known as a heavy drug, more serious punishments, I presume, across the country. But I do know it's Schedule One is when you got a problem in Nevada.
High potential for abuse, no medical value is what Schedule One is defined as. And in fact, psychedelic medicines are the exact opposite. They're anti-addictive, and they have a low potential for abuse in ways that we could discuss over a period of time. They're simply not the type of thing that is addictive. There's no withdrawal symptoms, which draws you to go back to it. So when we talk about that how should we approach this for Nevada for legalization, you know, our belief is that we start off with a regulated, legalized access, where there's controls, where there's set and setting, where there's something called psychedelic assisted therapy with the use of a therapist to be able to help the individuals. And we believe that in doing so, if you develop a regulatory architecture for this framework so that you can legally administer this with controls, you can also do so in such a way that you can do it at scale. Mm. And instead of helping hundreds, you know, or thousands of people in the underground, which would happen in a typical decriminalization model, this is all above board, there's no stigma to it, and you can help tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions of Americans. And by the way, we're talking about mental health here. We didn't even address the opioid crisis, of which these things can really have a major impact. And we know that Nevada is one of the worst in the country for opioid addiction.
Would this be an FDA issue? Would it be approved by the FDA? And you know, because it's naturally grown, is it considered a holistic medicine versus a synthetic LSD or something along those lines? I mean, these are questions that I have as well.
Absolutely. So they initially, one of the reasons we're trying to get on the state level is because we know the federal government really has troubles just getting out of his own way.
And for example, weed or marijuana is still illegal at the federal level.
And if it was rescheduled when over 30 different states had legalized it, then maybe this could be happening on a federal level only.
Right.
There's federal efforts underway. We believe that to make this happen for Nevadans sooner, we need to address on a state level while they continue to clumsily move along on the federal level to try and get this thing forward.
Mm. Very good.
One thing to consider would be the Cole memo, which was used as that's a federal memo that's put out in 2013, so that as states legalized, like Nevada, individuals in those states can't be penalized and persecuted on that federal illegality, and in doing so, we would be able to get this thing legal.
And so what that means is Nevada's legalized marijuana. I get caught with a couple grams, whatever, of marijuana. It's not a crime, but the feds arrest me. So that's what John's talking about. Okay. Is that, and that's why, like, the people that are legally selling marijuana and growing it, for example, they have troubles with banks, because their money's FDIC insured. And guess what? That marijuana money is tainted as illegal money under federal law, but not state law. So I don't even know what they do with their money. But at first, they were not allowing banks to take that money. They said, we're going to yank your insurance away. And like lawyers that were trying to get involved in owning or operating a business, they said, give up your bar license or stay out of the business.
Pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
How do you test for shrooms? If someone gets pulled over and they're clearly not in their right mind, but they're not testing positive for alcohol, you know, what do police do, and is that practical?
Right now, the way that you would test for shrooms is to take that individual directly to a hospital or a lab to take blood sample. Has to happen pretty quickly, and then you can test for it that way, but it's not going to – right now, there's not like a breathalyzer.
And what we do now under the law here is John's exactly right. It's a blood test, and there's a nanogram level count that is a threshold for legal or illegal. Just like alcohol is a 0.08. It's weird that the statute says urine, but nobody uses urine. But it's all blood tests. That's what the police take. And I can't remember off the top of my head if it's like cocaine's 100 nanograms. I'll just say mushrooms, because I can't say psilocybin or whatever it is. That was that close. Psilocybin. Oh, I did it right. See, I'm
very
getting
nice,
better.
Very nice.
And
you learn this. You're
going to
need
expert.
It.
That's right. And did you bring enough for everybody? That's enough.
Well, questions. You already had everyone's earlier before this thing started. So yeah.
The happy drug.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just
that's
like that guy on the
internet earlier. But that's
absolutely
how they do it, Gerard. It's a blood test. They measure nanograms, and I don't know about mushrooms, but you know, everything has that half life or whatever they call it, that it goes through your system, like opiates, which are a huge problem, 2 to 3 days. I think cocaine might stay a little longer, but alcohol dissipates faster. So that's why they have different rules and laws for that.
You guys are both from up north, Reno area. What kind of response are you getting from lawmakers in Carson City?
We've had a great response. We were talking about SB 242 earlier, the bill that passed with the working group. And when it was first introduced, we had, you know, three legislators in support. Senator Rochelle Wynn is the champion of the bill, and Assemblyman Max Carter co-sponsored. And then by the end of the session, we had 9 co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle. Passed with a landslide. It was 16-4 on the Senate floor and 40-0 on the Assembly floor.
Mm.
And
wow.
There has been increasing amounts of support, both grassroots in the community and in the legislature. And we just had an interim judiciary committee hearing where we were discussing with the law enforcement and asking their questions and having public comment and testimony, and it was very helpful.
I think one of the things we found when talking to legislatures, especially the conservatives, of which I fall in that category, I'm a proud conservative, and it is simply about updating data and understanding that, okay, this isn't that hippie stuff we heard about in the 70s, that in fact we can throw down studies. The studies are already out there. They're already there that show the efficacy, that show the safety profiles, non-toxicity. And once you show legislators the facts, regardless of the side of the aisle that they're on, and then when you let them know this can help Nevadans, and also this can help veterans and first responders, and then you get their attention, and then and they want
many,
to see
many them. Conservatives are very pro freedom and pro options and choices and that sort of thing,
yes,
too.
Sir.
So I would think that you have some support on that side of the aisle as well.
Yeah.
But then again, a lot of conservatives are anti-drug. That's the Ronald Reagan days, back in the
80s. That's exactly right.
But what you're talking about is was hitting home with how it's perceived. And that's the perception that has to be overcome. Because wasn't MDMA, which is now on the street term Molly, wasn't that originally a drug prescribed by doctors for people with depression? Well, and then it got abused, and next thing you know,
it jumped the lab.
Oh, there you go. There's a term.
It was, I believe it was first developed in 1918, not important, by the Merck Pharmaceuticals. You have to fact check me on that. But then Sasha Shulgin resynthesized it, and then they were using it for couples therapy in the 80s.
And it was being prescribed. Or was it not?
It was being used in research at that point for couples therapy. Okay. And MDMA, in fact, is now being looked at as what we would kind of call the gold standard for PTSD and veterans and rape.
Therapy status in 2017, and they're facing – MAPS submitted a new drug application this last December, I believe it was, and it might be federally approved as early as August this year.
I have one last counterpoint argument, playing devil's advocate once again. And this was brought up by one of the people that we interviewed in our little community segment. What about the fact that we are enabling or encouraging young people to go out and experiment with mushrooms? I know people, they're adults, but they are growing mushrooms. They are foraging in our mountains, and exactly. And so there's a segment out there that is in this experimental phase.
Right.
Yeah. Are we doing a disservice by kind of creating this wonder and this hey, this is great kind of attitude?
I think that is an excellent question, and I would beg to differ, because on the terms of encouraging people to go out to experiment, because a lot of our mission, and with the sister organization with Sierra Psychedelic Society, mm-hmm. we're geared toward education and promoting risk management. And so much of this is about educating the public on this is not something to be trifled with. These, plant medicines have been used for thousands of years, but they were used with guidance in what we refer to as a container. There might have been a medicine worker or shaman. And so this isn't about, let's take a handful of mushrooms and see what happens. Let's look at this as a very serious medicine. There are guidelines. There's precautions to be taken. They're not safe for everyone to be using. There are contraindications. And so there's a broad spectrum. Let's be really measured about how we approach this. And especially for people that are younger and in a process where, the brain is still developing, absolutely not part of the messaging that people should just, go out and experiment.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anything like that today, or even when we were off the show discussing it. Plus, just like, dealing with people in mental health court, they get their medication, which is a drug, and they have to adjust it. Sometimes you might need 10 milligrams, I need 30, and it's not working, so I go down to 20, you go up. I mean, it has to be, these are real drugs. This, with all respect, that weed and alcohol are similar, in my opinion, which is not science-based. People can abuse it and it affects everybody differently, but it's not as powerful to me as these other drugs. And what Kate said is right. You can't just go, hey, let's have a handful of mushrooms and woo, it's Friday night.
Yeah. Right.
I would say that, I would not, I agree with you. I would not put these in the same category as cannabis or alcohol. There's a huge difference between 0.5 grams and 5 grams of mushrooms in which you are completely debilitated. And so there is the concern of that people are going to experiment, and especially kids. And in fact, we have to plan for that. And the way to plan for that is to get that education out there to understand how powerful this stuff is. Now, when we look at Colorado, and Colorado decriminalized psilocybin pretty early on, and they did a study back probably 2 years ago.
It was the Denver Comprehensive Report.
The Denver Comprehensive Report. And one of the things they did notice was that they did not see any measurable increase in criminality accidents and things like that when this was introduced.
That's a strong point.
That's a strong point.
And other states have come along as well. I believe Michigan has passed it.
Oregon. Now, Oregon had went on a complete decrim tangent. Yeah. And so, in fact, what you'll see is there's an increase in overdoses. There's an increase in things that are bad for all this big umbrella of drugs that they decriminalized as a whole. So psychedelic medicines is right in there in that umbrella. And even though it's not necessarily having the same effect of – it's not having the same effect of overdoses and detrimental effects – because of what Oregon did, it's kind of falling in that same thing, and we really have to differentiate and say, wait a minute, this is not doing, it's the heroin, it's heroin is causing a lot more overdoses, this is not happening with psilocybin, let's take a look.
It's the opiates, heroin. Yeah. I always said that like the Percocets and the Narcos or whatever other terms, this is heroin in a pill, because it's an opiate, you know.
Tony, your position off the top of this podcast was something along the lines of, it's inevitable, it's going to happen, so... We're pushing forward. After this discussion, what are your thoughts? Any differences?
Well, it's not that it was inevitable. It's happening. And let's be practical. And as I just stated, with these drugs, you got to use it the right way. And you can't just have some 20-year-old kid working at the cannabis store selling them, because this is more powerful. But as I also like to say, mushrooms are it's a happy drug. You know, it makes you happy.
Not always.
But if you take too much, it's a bad trip. Not that me and my friends ever did that. You know, it's...
There's all kinds of evidence here. Yeah, today.
You know, once again, just like alcohol. You drink too much, it's not a fun trip. But you don't call it a trip because, you know, whether you're hungover, you're throwing up, anything. I take blood pressure pills. If I take too many, my blood pressure drops and I'm having problems. It's like any drug. You have to take it seriously. It's not a joke to pop 5 grams of mushrooms when you should take a half a gram.
Well, even at a half a gram, because they're non-specific amplifiers, so you can still have, there's a range of effects that can happen. That's why set and setting is so important when you're going in with your mindset and the environment. And also, I think it's really important to point out the non-toxicity of these substances. Psilocybin is the safest. Dr. David Nutt, who's the leading psychopharmacologist in the world, created a harm scale based on two metrics, harm to self and harm to society. And we have, you know, alcohol on the far, alcohol, tobacco, far most dangerous. And then we have mushrooms on the safest end, followed closely thereafter by LSD and
MDMA.
Even cannabis is further on the
farm. Wow, I didn't know that.
And so these substances are incredibly non-toxic. I mean, I think you have to...
Technically, Tylenol is more toxic than it. On the other hand...
If you abuse... My wife's a dentist. She doesn't like prescribing pain pills even before the crisis occurred with opiates. And she said you alternate Tylenol and Advil because one goes through your kidneys, one goes through the liver. If you use all of one, you're abusing your kidney, and that's something you buy in the store.
I think we've covered a lot of ground here today, and I think we're just about ready to give a verdict on this. So we will have our verdict, the Vegas verdict, coming up right after this break.
Legal troubles require swift action. And there's only one attorney who's quick on his feet.
Legal troubles don't wait, and neither should you. I'm Tony Abbotangelo, a former judge with 30 years' experience. I know the judicial system, and I know what will work for you in court.
When your circumstance requires a skilled negotiator who knows the law, tap into Tony. He's a former judge who can defend your rights. Call 707-7000.
Welcome back to the Vegas Verdict, everyone. On this episode, we have been discussing the idea and the concept of shrooms, legalizing it here in the state of Nevada. We want to close out this subject. John and Kate, we want you to give us your final thoughts on why this is a good idea.
Well, we have an opportunity to change thousands of lives. We know that these substances work. We know they're safe. A lot of education is out there, and we're in the process of, you know, trying to help educate and advance policy reform for many reasons. Plenty to say. John, feel free to begin.
Yeah, it's pretty clear to me, obviously. I mean, Nevada bounces on the bottom for mental health and bounces on the bottom for opioid addiction, and we can we can change that in a massively disruptive manner for the for the good. And so I believe that there's room in Nevada for psychedelic medicines.
Tony, your final thoughts?
I just think that if it's properly regulated, that it should be used in limited purposes. Once again, not going to go to the 7-Eleven, just buy a bunch of mushrooms or MDMA. Just needs to be done correctly. Alcohol is the famous gateway drug, and it has a big effect on people and a lot of problems with society, but a majority of people control it. So same thing with any other drug. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, our topic today was, is Vegas ready for shrooms? And the Vegas verdict is
yes.
And I will say yes, but with a caveat. We don't, I think, want recreational use to the point where young people are having their pick of whatever is out there and people driving and hallucinating. We need to fine-tune that regulation component and decide how we're going to prescribe it or use it as well. I think there's a lot to be done. And with that, we will continue this discussion as more legislation comes forward and new bills are approached. I'm sure you'll have a hand in that directly. Thank you. You've been watching The Vegas Verdict.